Rock, sport and talk.
Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
I come from a policing background. I was a detective for 20 years. And so my books are about true crimes, essentially unsolved murders. Now, much as I'd like to think that I was known for my writing of books and writing of plays, the harsh reality is I'm best known for catching pretend fugitives on Channel 4's TV show, Hunted, which I've subsequently left. So when I was looking at my next project, I wanted to combine the skills that I've got, being an investigator, a detective, the network that I've got, that I've built up over the years of people involved in open source intelligence gathering, for example. You know, these digital detectives that sit in front of computer screens and can find out an incredible amount of information about people. Also, engaging people, ethical hackers, who are able to quite legitimately and lawfully find their ways into the deep, dark recesses of the internet. Again, to find stuff out about people that they might not want me to know. So combining my skills, combining my network, and using the fact that I was known for catching pretend fugitives, it absolutely made sense for me to focus on trying to catch a real one. And that, of course, means Kevin Parr, in my opinion, Britain's most wanted man, wanted for two horrendous crimes: the shooting dead of a 16-year-old boy, Liam Kelly, in 2004. I can accurately say that Liam wasn't a model student, for example, but this boy was denied the opportunity to mature, to enter manhood, to get himself a job, a career potentially, and provide for loved ones of his own. Denied all of that by being savagely gunned down in Grafton Street in 2004. And then, of course, the murder of Lucy Hargreaves, a 22-year-old mother of three young children, savagely assassinated in her own home, which was then set on fire. I struggle to think of more heinous crimes than these. And the fact that Kevin Parr, who is wanted in connection with both of those crimes and has now been on the run for over 5,400 days, quite frankly says to me, enough is enough. So I am doing all I possibly can to try and bring that time on the run to an end. I've been extremely fortunate since launching my hunt for him on the 29th of April this year. Many, many courageous people have come forward and contacted me via email, telephone, text, social media, my website. I'm easily contactable. And many people have come forward to do just that. I've received a raft of information, much of which I am looking to really put flesh on the bones. I've had five different reported sightings of Parr in five different countries. You'll forgive me for not naming them, because if they are accurate, if they are correct, I don't want to give a heads up to Kevin Parr that I know where he may be. And much more information about Parr the man is beginning to come my way. And I urge people to keep it coming, because by painting a very accurate picture of Parr the man, who may, of course, have entirely reinvented himself somewhere. He could be on any corner of the globe, perhaps living with an unsuspecting partner, completely unaware of his past. He may have children, and he might be utterly reinvented from the person that he was. But there will be certain traits and characteristics that he simply will not be able to shed. For example, he's 6'6". He's going to struggle to disguise that. And there are other things that I've discovered about him. For example, his arrogance. Many people spoke about him being a very arrogant man, that he always thought he was the cleverest crook in the room. All these kind of things he is going to struggle to disguise. And they may lead to somebody who may have recognised him living a different life, living in a different name. They might go, ah, actually, yes, I'm beginning to join the dots now. And that 6'6" man who, say, for example, delivered and fitted my washing machine the other day, he displayed some of those traits. Yes, he was rather arrogant. Yes, now I've seen that picture, that's it. That's the man. And such a person can pick up the phone, they can ring me on 07908 617 694, or they can, of course, contact the police, they can contact Crime Stoppers, or they can reach out to me in any of the different ways, social media, email, my website, all of that. Enough is enough. Kevin Pahl's time on the run must be brought to an end, and that is why I'm dedicating my life to this mission.
If I may ask, Peter, obviously with all due respect, Kevin Pahl has been on the run now for a very long time. When we look at this, he's evaded evaded detectives, he's evaded, you know, if he is abroad, he's eloped to abroad, he's evaded detectives over there and international manhunts as well. What is it about your information? What is it about your background, your history, your career, what you've achieved that gives you that confidence that you're the man to track him down and bring him to potential justice?
I would like to say that I am in dialogue with the police. They are fully aware of what I'm doing, and we have an informal relationship that means we can speak to one another. So this isn't an ego trip, and this most definitely is not an attempt to try to embarrass the Merseyside police, who of course will have their own inquiries, I'm sure. But that's for them. They keep that to themselves. That is only right. I have a slight advantage over the police, and that is I am not bound by the Police and Criminal Evidence Act of 1984, which dictates how the police should operate. I can do things the police simply can't. For example, my social media campaigns. Some of it is deliberately set up to antagonise and irritate Kevin Pahl and those who are potentially harbouring him. Yeah, unashamedly, I can do that. The police, of course, cannot.
Tell me about the victims' families. You know, what contact you've had with them, and what they sort of make of all this.
Before I started out on this, I contacted the police and I asked them to inform the families of both Liam and Lucy of exactly what I was doing. I thought that was absolutely the right thing to do. At this moment, they don't want to grant me an interview. That, of course, is their absolute right and privilege, and I respect that. They are being kept aware of what I'm doing via the police, and they have certainly raised no objections whatsoever to me and my effort to try and find him.
Tell me about the mindset of a man, the mindset of a suspected murderer, a wanted suspected killer who's gone on the run now for, 15 years. What is the mindset of somebody that can evade capture for so long? And how likely is it that that person will become complacent and maybe make a mistake?
I would imagine by now he has become supremely confident in his ability to evade capture. And of course, 14 or 15 years on the run will only have fueled that mindset. So I am sure that possibly from afar, he or those that are harbouring and otherwise helping him will be looking at my efforts and maybe laughing to themselves and possibly saying to Kevin, keep doing what you've done for the last 14 years. Don't rise to the bait. Don't let Peter Blexley irritate you. Just keep doing what you've been doing. And it may be that for a few months, he is going to keep an even lower profile, perhaps, than before. He may be not stepping out of wheresoever it is that he is living. Fine, I'm in this for the long run as well. This is not some flash-in-the-pan kind of idea of mine, which is suddenly going to go away when my book is published, say, for example, in a year's time. That book will merely be another step down the path to capturing him, because in that book will be all the information that you can't get from a police's wanted poster, that you cannot get from just reading the brief outline details of the crimes. I will have in there, is he left-handed? Is he right-handed? What does he drink? What are his dietary likes or needs or requirements, for example? How many sugars does he take in his tea or his coffee? All this kind of personal information, which will help somebody recognise him, hopefully, join up the dots and get on the phone.
What is the inspiration for this, Peter? When you know, you've read the victim stories, you obviously have your own, you know, very decorated background as well. We've seen you on TV. I'm a big fan of Haunted, I must say myself. But what is the inspiration for this? I mean, when you talk about that this isn't something that, it's not a driven ego trip, if you like. You know, is this something that you're doing for the victims? Is this something that you're doing for you? Is this something that you're doing for the justice system to bring this man to justice who's been on the run for so long?
Yes. You've kind of nailed it, but essentially it boils down to the families of Liam and Lucy. I would like to see Kevin Parle captured. I would like to see him stand in a court of law and answer the accusations that will be made against him. And I would like there to be some kind of resolution for the families of Liam and Lucy, who have had to suffer unimaginable grief, heartache and hurt.
You get round a table with Kevin Parle, you sit him down, you know, the first time you sort of get eyes on him. How does that conversation go? I mean, what would that moment be like?
I would like to know how he has managed to evade capture for so long, because that information will be vitally important in the hunt for future other wanted fugitives.
And finally, Peter, I mean, how confident are you that you can see this through?
Well, if the last 3.5 weeks are anything to go by, then the information coming my way is, number one, credible, number two, very well intentioned, and hopefully, lastly, accurate, precise, and will lead those who have the handcuffs, because I don't, lead those who are possession of the handcuffs to put in Kevin Parle's hands behind his back, slapping them on and starting the process towards bringing him to a court of law.
Rock, sport and talk.
Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.